What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, Minor League Umpires. We were talking with Mark Stubblefield. He is in his seventh year as being the athletic trainer that deals with minor league umpire injuries, dealing with insurance claims, following up with rehabs, and doing what athletic trainers do in taking care of athletes. His just athletic population is slightly different than the majority of us. So I'm your host, Jeremy Jackson. We got Sean Reedy here sitting beside me, all dressed pretty. He just went for an interview today. It is National Athletic Training Month, and this is being recorded, so happy National Athletic Training Month. If you'd like to join this conversation, check out the show notes, something like that, go to sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, and then the show notes for this are at sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/umpire. So without much further ado, Mark, why don't you tell us about your athletic trainer story? I know you said you had years with the minor league teams, and tell me what you did before that, and then we'll get to the minor league teams.
All right, Jeremy, thanks for having me, first of all. A little bit about my history of athletic training. After I completed my master's degree, I was employed for 1 year by the Cincinnati Reds working at the rookie ball level. Got my first taste of baseball, really enjoyed it at the professional level. And from there, then the next year, I was hired on by the Kansas City Royals, working at their rookie ball level. Over the course of 9 years with the Royals, worked my way at various levels up to double A. Prior to the 2011 season, there was a job posting placed on Professional Baseball Athletic Training Society webpage seeking a medical coordinator for the umpires. While the major league umpires have had someone overseeing their health care since 1999, there has been no overseeing of health care at the minor league level since that time. So in 2011, minor league baseball decided they were going to hire a medical coordinator. Went through the interview process, and in February 2011, I was hired full-time by the minor league baseball office to oversee the healthcare of the 230 minor league umpires.
Okay, so what does it look like to oversee the healthcare for all the minor league umpires?
Yeah, it's it was definitely a change of working on the field with the individual athletes. It is a more of an administrative position than I was used to, and something I have gotten used to. But as you alluded to earlier, it is a lot of paperwork, filing of insurance claims, a lot of time spent on the phone, setting up doctor's appointments, rehab appointments. We have the 230 umpires. Once we're fully staffed in rookie ball leagues that start in June, we have umpires working in 43 different states and Vancouver, British Columbia. So the hands-on aspect of athletic training is not really done in my my setting. I rely heavily on the minor league athletic trainers that are assigned to each of the clubs for the initial evaluation of the umpire injury, and then they document their injury on a electronic medical records, and that comes into a system that I then follow up with and follow up with the athletic trainer to ensure that that umpire can take the field the next day, and if they are out, trying to give them the best estimate on how long they need to get a replacement umpire for.
All right, so you're coordinating the healthcare for 230 umpires. Do you actually get to do hands-on out? I know you said right now you're in spring training, so there's probably a lot of them right there in your area, or at least that's how I understand it to be. So do you get to do much of the hands-on now?
No, we're pretty much split. I mean, 15 teams in Arizona, 15 teams in Florida. My typical day when I do go out to a spring training game, I visit with the umpires in the locker room before the game, talk to them of any previous history, injuries they had, any off-season surgeries that they have, rehab, what's going on, any concerns that the supervisors have seen, whether it be running styles, anything like that. And then during the game, I will sit either in the stands or in the press box, depending on the setting, and observe the umpire for any, again, running abnormalities I see, mobility issues, and report back on those. Work with the umpire to try to correct those before they become problematic injuries. As far as rehab during spring training, just because I really don't have a facility, I have a regular office here at the minor league office, but I don't have a rehab facility. So we do have several areas in the immediate area, both St. Pete, down in Miami, Fort Lauderdale, that we use for our rehab in the morning if needed.
So why was an athletic trainer chosen to do administrative work?
I mean, there is still the medical aspect of it to it. Before I was hired, they did have a legal secretary over that filing the workers' comp claims, and her lack of medical knowledge, she was turning stuff into workers' comp that probably didn't need to be and was driving the cost upward. Obviously, the more claims that you're going to submit, the annual premium goes up. And, you know, no fault against her. She just didn't have any medical knowledge to determine what needed to follow up, what didn't. So for review of the pre-participation exams that we do, right now our umpires get those off-site by their own physician back home. And then we review those along with our medical consultant, Dr. Mark Hilgers out of Chicago.
I got you. So really it just comes down to that an athletic trainer is better fit because we understand the process and we understand what needs to be sent and doesn't need to be sent to a doctor and things that we can manage in-house. So sure. Gotcha.
Correct. So I guess one of my first questions, and forgive me if I'm jumping ahead on you, Jeremy, I'm kind of looking through this, but it's if you do get a long-term injury, if you do have a umpire that sustains some sort of long-term injury, let's just utilize an ACL tear, running down to first base and they tear their ACL. What does that look like and how does your job affect that? Because obviously you're working with a private, they're a private contractor or they are a contractor for you. And then as you said, workers' comp comes in. How does that work and where then do they go for their rehab? Where is your recommendations for that? And if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah. Anything long-term like that, you know, surgical that they're going to be out for a long period of time, then that's the, those are the easy ones. So they go back home, you know, they all have off-season homes, wherever that may be. And we set it up, either through connections. As I said, we have, affiliates in 43 of the states. So good chance that wherever that umpire is living, we have a connection with a orthopod and rehab facility back there. Not, we just kind of go on the recommendation of workers' compensation. They find a provider for us. Like I said, those are the easy ones. We know they're going to be home for the ones that are a little more challenging. We'll touch about this a little bit later, I'm sure, but the amount of concussions that we have, those are the ones that, you know, we really don't know because an umpire is hurt. We know he can't work, why he's symptomatic and why he's going through the return to play protocol. But as we all know, that could be anywhere from, 7 days to, months. So those are the ones that are kind of the interesting one because the umpire gets injured. If it's going to be short term, he's going to stay with his crew. They work in crews of two or three traveling one individual league. So they can stay with their crew, obviously not working, but then they're in a car moving every 3 days. It's tough for them to do any kind of therapy. But at the cost of sending them home versus keeping them with the league or with the crew, then that becomes a challenge there, a question that the league president has to answer.
So, So with that day-to-day operation of that, is that something that you are checking on, whether it be one of those short-term injuries or that long-term injury? Is that something that in your day-to-day you go and you make a phone call to that athletic trainer that you know will see them or those two athletic trainers that in those minor league positions mm-hmm. that will see them, hey, check on so-and-so, they're recovering from this, and I just want to have an eye on them or a visual of them.
Correct. Yeah, that is, once they're injured, that pretty much is their job. They're not working in the field anymore, but they know that sometime during the day, they have to go in and see the athletic trainer at that particular club, and then the club athletic trainer will call me. I obviously do a phone consult with the umpire every day. In some cases, our medical consultant will do a phone call or a video consult with them just so they can get a visual on them. I tell you, technology has made this job so much easier than what I hear it was when my predecessor had the job. So it's definitely helped out a lot. But that's really an athlete trainer or a physician gets eyes or ears on them each and every day when they're out of work.
Sorry. Okay. So I guess when you're talking about a short-term injury now, mm-hmm. going back from that ACL tear, that long-term injury, simple ankle sprain, something like that, kind of talking about that the majority of your day, what does your day look like? How are you checking in on those patients, those athletes, or those umpires and how are you checking in with those athletic trainers? Hey, in the college setting, they come in, the umpires or the referees or whatever, they come in and they get taped and they've been checked out by somebody at different places. But with you being over them, and are you following that? Obviously, you stated that there's electronic medical record. There's you know about it, but how are you following that treatment?
And that's why my position was created, because previously an umpire would see an athletic trainer in one city, a physician in another, get an x-ray here, get an MRI here, because, as I said, they're moving every 3 to 4 days. So there was nobody really to structure the healthcare of these umpires. So yeah, I'm the one kind of collecting all the data, and say they move from Burlington, Iowa, on to Appleton, Wisconsin, in the Midwest League. Notes up to the athletic trainer in Appleton, so he or she can observe what was being done previously, what progress the umpire is making, and what our goals are to return that umpire to the field.
I know when we talked to Lyle Danley, he mentioned you guys use Sutton and do a lot of electronic records and stuff like that, so that everywhere throughout the whole major leagues, it's easy to do that. And so that's really cool that you guys can do all that. But I'm just wondering, how difficult is it for the minor league athletic trainers to manage their normal patient load and enter all that paperwork for the officials as well?
I've made it really simple for the minor league athletic trainers, because I realize it is quite a challenge. I mean, major league level, you're going to have at least two athletic trainers, most cases three. You're going to have a massage therapist, physical therapist. At the minor league level, it's generally 1 versus 25, and I completely understand that. So really, the initial injury report that they fill out online is probably the most detailed. Outside of that, the athletic trainer either just shoot me a text or a quick email in paragraph form, and then I take that from there, copy and paste in the electronic medical record, because for that athlete trainer to put it in the system is a little more time consuming. But anyway, you know, as the game's ending in the ninth inning, he can type me a quick text saying, okay, no apparent issues, looked good, and here's the treatment I did. He can have that done in a matter of time. Whereas if you were actually going to the electronic medical record system and type it up, it would be time consuming for him. I still have some athletic trainers that prefer a phone call, and will call me after the game with their updates, which is fine from there. And amend it accordingly. So I try to make it as user friendly for the athletic trainer, because again, I was in that situation for 11 years and know how other duties, as I say, the athletic trainer has to do. So anything I can do to take that load off of them. And then I also make sure that our umpires realize that the 25-man roster that athletic trainer is dealing with is their priority. If they're going in for rehab, if it's a short-term injury, like you said with the ankle sprain, may have to go in at 1 o'clock in the afternoon for a 7 o'clock game. When the athletic trainer first gets there, before the players get there, you may have to go in at 1 o'clock. And they're all very, they're getting great medical care, and it's convenient for them. Because if during the season, if we were shipping them off to a physical therapy center, and again, they're moving cities every 3 or 4 days, so it is very challenging to do that. But if we were, they would be getting up at in the morning and getting 1 hour care by a physical therapist at a walk-in clinic, or I'm sorry, at a clinic, and treat them at a more convenient time for them. So, but it's a give and take. And like I said, I definitely understand that the athletic trainers definitely have their plate full, so I try to make it as easy for them as possible.
And if you actually had to send them to a place like that, they would, every time you send them someplace, they would want to do an initial eval again and something like that. And they obviously don't have that update from you that tells you, hey, this is what's going on, this is what they've been doing, just set them up with these few exercises, or check on their range of motion, or check on they need tape and they need a little bit of treatment. So
correct. And again, another way I try to eliminate the amount of work for the minor league athletic trainer, as many home exercise programs as I can do for these umpires, especially once they're back on the field, they'll get an email from me with a home exercise program, that they have to, do and maintain their exercise program. So they stay on the field and, bracing versus taping, just because, again, I know it's a simple task for an athletic trainer to tape an ankle, but that umpire out of the athletic training room and let him focus on his guys. When we need something, it's a little less cumbersome.
I got you. So what are some of the normal everyday injuries that an umpire deals with?
Biggest one, as far as time loss concern, is a concussion, as I already alluded to. And again, that's just like anything else. We're becoming more aware of it and developing better protocols to safely return to the field. That was honestly one of the driving forces behind employing a medical coordinator at the minor league level. To have someone oversee that program. Concussions are number one. Obviously, standing right behind a catcher that, as I say, may or may not catch the ball, you have to, get the common bruises and stuff like that. Most of those are simple, and then obviously with the umpire always in a forward-leaning position, you're going to see a lot of low back injuries. So again, that's the maintenance we're doing with the ergonomic programs and the core programs that we're doing. Prior to the season, each umpire does receive a physical therapy evaluation using a functional movement screening and develops their own individual exercise program for them. And that has greatly reduced the amount of soft tissue injuries that we've seen over the past 3 years.
Wow. And before we started the actual interview, you were telling me that these guys only work five months out of the year.
Yeah. If you count spring training and postseason, they're upwards of six and a half months. But yeah, they all have a significant amount of downtime as they progress through the system. They're obviously working instructional league that will go into the fall league. Some of them are selected to work winter ball down in Venezuela and Dominican Republic. So, you know, there are opportunities to umpire year round if they are so selected. But you're generally your first couple of years, you're only working starting spring training in early March, and then your postseason wraps up generally around early September.
So is that something that you'll send them postseason? I guess do a postseason follow up. These are the five things that I want you to go home and do while you're off, while you have this time off, because you have that low back pain. You've dealt with some sort of issue like that. Is that something that you typically send with them, and that, like you said, that rehab or that at home stuff?
Yeah, we definitely do that. Now, that is one time that if they are home, and again, the home exercise program, if it's one I might have concern with compliance of doing it in the home, in the off season, because they're quote unquote off with a physical therapist in their hometown, because again, they're going to be there for 3 or 4 months. They can get some good quality care there. I have a little better way of tracking it there because I can talk to the physical therapist that they're working with.
So when you talk about concussion, obviously you're probably talking about that foul tip, ball mm-hmm. to the face type,
correct.
Type deal. What other, obviously I've seen watching a lot of baseball, spending a lot of time as a baseball athletic trainer as well. You've seen a lot of the throat. What are some of those injuries that you also see that actually might pull somebody out for a game, but might not obviously be later on through, they might not have to finish or not be able to finish the weekend, but might not be able to finish that game because of it there at the home plate.
Yeah, outside of concussions, you'll see any kind of a contusion or injury of the hand that may prevent them from using the indicator as they need to. Pain-wise, obviously, any immediate concern of fracture. That's probably the most common area that's x-rayed just because of the position that they are in. The hands are pretty vulnerable. The hands are in front there. You know, everyone's like, well, why don't they just put their hands behind their back and then they're protected? Well, try squatting 300 times with your hands behind your back and not having your hands on your front of your knees. It does make a huge difference there. So unfortunately, they are left kind of vulnerable there. So the hand injuries are common for having an umpire pulled. Outside of the concussions, again, lower extremity soft tissue injuries are very rare. But obviously when those occur on the bases, more so than anything, a base umpire, especially at the AA, AAA level where it's 3-man umpiring system, pretty relatively stationary for periods of time, and then all of a sudden have to make that quick movement to go out to the outfield to observe a catch, no catch ball. And that's when you're going to see some soft tissue injuries. You know, it's not like the basketball athlete that's once they're on the field or on the court, they're constantly moving. Stationary for some time. Again, yes, they're moving around in between pitches, but nothing at the caliber they need to run out to the outfield quickly.
Yeah, I got you. So since it's National Athletic Training Month, when we're recording this, how has your job helped promote athletic training? Because it seems like those umpires would have a better relationship with an athletic trainer now because you're coordinating that health, you're communicating with them, you guys are following up. So in your opinion, how has it helped?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's made the transition. I mean, as I said, these umpires are in a different league every year and they're in a different city every 3 or 4 days. They don't want to go in to see the athletic trainer initially. So I'm bridging that gap, making the umpire more aware of what the athletic trainer does, correct terminology of how to address the athletic trainer on the field. So I think I'm doing the educational aspect there of helping the umpire understand exactly what an athletic trainer can do to help them. And generally only takes one injury and they are singing the praises of athletic training. So that's definitely a positive that I've seen. And then obviously when just the streamlining from the administrative side of using medical connections to get them into a doctor quicker than what they would be if they went to a walk-in clinic or whatever the case is. You know, they're still blown away that the athletic trainers in each of these cities have such great connections with every medical field needed. So it's definitely been an eye-opening experience, I think, for the umpires, and they've been very, very receptive to everything we've done for them. Not only, you know, the athletic trainers, but the entire healthcare system. When they get injured, it involves just more than the athletic trainer. But, you know, these are the frontline guys that they see each and every day, and I think they're very receptive to the help they provide.
You mentioned a lot of low back pain, a lot of low back issues from all the squatting. What are some of your favorite exercises that you put on your home exercise plan or the individual exercise plan that you create?
Yeah, I mean, we just have a pretty basic core activity, but everything is really tailored to the individual umpire as they need it. Whether it be more of the backside or abdominals, obliques, whatever it may be, they really tailor that to it. Nothing wrong with the good old classic plank and bridges. I mean, those are probably the best for our umpires to use, and I would say to say they're probably 90% of the programs that we send out. Yeah, it's pretty basic, no equipment needed. They can do it in a hotel room. There's so many variations of a plank they can do. But, you know, that's probably one of the foundations that we use on pretty much every one of our programs.
And it's very difficult for them to screw up.
Yes. Well, yeah.
Well, kind of. To an extent.
Exactly.
You mentioned how the athletic trainers at these local, when they're going to a local venue and they talk to, and they're understanding that this athletic trainer now has a lot of connections, you might say, with different medical staff. How does that work not only, or how does that help them, and how does that open their eyes to them, not only on the orthopedic side of things, but, hey, you know, I'm starting to get sick, or I'm dealing with upper respiratory, or I've had these issues, or I've had these symptoms. What do you think's going on here? And has the athletic trainer for a lot of these, because obviously some of these individuals are not the typical athlete that an athletic trainer would see, so you could actually pop up some issues that could be outside of the typical athlete realm, correct?
Yes, definitely. And the umpire is really the only one that on the field that doesn't ever have a home game. You think about that, even in the minor leagues, out of 140 games, 70 of those games are going to be played at one venue, whereas the umpire, you know, your typical league has anywhere between 12 and 15 different cities. So over the course of the season, they're equally divided among those 15 cities. So if you have, you know, 10 games in one city spread out of the course of 6 months, you're fortunate there. So the network that these athletic trainers develop is vitally important, not only for the orthopedic side of it, but just the general cough and, you know, cold, flu-like symptoms. If an umpire goes, and we've all seen this at whatever level we're athletic trainers at, if they don't go to a physician that understands sports medicine and that they can work with some limitations and that they're going to be receiving treatment and being monitored in the clinic and get an x-ray, okay, there's no fracture, but you're out for 2 weeks. Well, in a 5 month season, 2 weeks is a long time. So the fact that the athletic trainer can set them up with their team physician and they understand the items that I just mentioned, that they will be monitored, we're not looking to make them play injured, but that they can play with some, you know, soreness. So I think that's a huge aspect that the athletic trainer or that the umpire has realized, that they can stay out of walk-in clinics and stay out of the emergency room. It's going to automatically put them out for 10 days or 2 weeks.
Mark, what do you think is the most unique part of your job as the coordinator for minor league umpires?
I think really it's the travel and the streamlining of the medicine. Like I said, during the season, I travel out to, you know, there's 140 minor league cities. Out of that, I think over the last 6 years, I have hit about 100 of those cities. So it's definitely a unique aspect of traveling there and getting to meet many, many athletic trainers across the board, countries, athletic trainers from different countries. During spring training, several of the clubs bring in athletic trainers from Japan. So I had the opportunity to meet some of those. So again, it's just getting to meet those. But as far as the individual, my job, it's an administrative job. It's an observation job. The phone communication skills definitely improve, because you really have to dig down and ask the umpire. I mean, it's, you know, oh, this hurts. Well, what have you done for it? Why is it hurting? And is a very important part of the evaluation. But really, that's all I have to go on over the phone until I talk to that athletic trainer who's seen him. You know, the observation, the palpation, it's just not there. So, I mean, you really have to hone in on your evaluation skills through the history aspect of it. And that generally does tell you a great deal of it if the umpire wants to be truthful and forthcoming with what's going on.
So right now we're using Google Hangouts to do a video call. Have you been able to do any telemedicine with the umpire saying, all right, we'll set up your phone, do a video, show me where it hurts, what it hurts, anything like that?
Yeah, we've done more so with concussion exams. We'll do a FaceTime or a Skype between our doctor and the umpire. And that's really just so our doctor and I can get a visual on them, kind of make them pull them more at ease. Something, you know, as simple as the impact score still hasn't returned to normal. So why am I still off the field? You know, your balance is off and we're looking at this. And that's when our doctor will step in and do a video conferencing type thing. But yeah, like I said, technology has made this job definitely easier, probably a little underutilized, but definitely something we're looking at adding, adding to our repertoire.
So with your job being a lot more administrative, as you've said, is there last week, Jeremy had on Scott Saylor and he was talking about some of his favorite CEUs. Is there, or CEU events and things that he does, is there anything in more of the sports medicine, athletic training, administrative side of things that you have done and that you like and have helped you to get to the, not so much get to the position, but helped you in the position that you are in since now? I mean, athletic trainers find themselves in more of that administrative role a lot of times and are doing a lot more of that anymore.
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, I actually have been able to attend the annual conference, which when I was 11 years I was on the field with the baseball team, I wasn't ever able to attend. So, but I do find myself gravitating more towards the administrative meetings at those conferences. Kind of shying away a little more from the shoulder and the elbow that I used to attend, and a different mindset. But I think most continuing education conferences are an equal blend of it. And you know, the larger ones like the NATA annual meeting, it's just a matter of picking and choosing. But yeah, definitely my mindset on what I attend has definitely changed because of this job. Kind of the good thing for me, I've had a good mentor with the gentleman that is running Major League umpires, health and safety, and as the medical coordinator for Major League Baseball. He was hired in 1999, so he had 12 years, I guess, trial and error of what works, and he's been really helpful in getting me set up and kind of guiding me and helping make that transition from on-field healthcare with a club in the lone duck, as you say, doing the administrative side of it.
So would someone be able to fill in your position or, you know, be your assistant or whatever when you retire if they didn't have any experience at the minor league level?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it definitely helps having the knowledge of baseball. But I mean, baseball at any level is in this aspect of it. I mean, again, I was on the field for so long. I really had no idea the structure of minor league baseball, how an umpire became a minor league umpire. I don't know if I was under the impression that every umpire was just hired locally by the affiliate. I didn't have any idea that they were all employed by minor league baseball. But it could. I mean, it definitely was an asset for that aspect of it, getting used to the travel. Like I said, there was a decent amount of travel involved. So, I mean, having the fact that you have a background of travel and able to set up basically and run an office out of any hotel room is beneficial. But, I mean, I think any athletic trainer that's worked at any level is obviously used to the travel and setting up and doing things on the go. So certainly anyone could, yes.
I know you mentioned phone communication is a huge part of what you do. What other skills would be important for someone that wants to do something like what you're doing?
Just like I said, overall personal communication, getting out, not being afraid to meet new people. Like I said, we hire about 40 new umpires a year. So as they come into the rookie ball level, they're either stationed in Florida or Arizona, going out and meeting these people, meeting the new athletic trainers, not afraid to walk into a clubhouse and credentials around our neck, but still we get stopped and, hey, I'm going to meet this person. And again, reaching out to people, not waiting for them to come to you. You know, and I reach out to any of the new athletic trainers that I can each and every year, because I don't want to wait until an umpire is sitting there waiting on an evaluation. And then I have to call and introduce myself. I get out to, we have a Florida meeting here for PBATS. I try to get out to that every year possible that I can. And then out in Arizona, they have one as well that I've been fortunate to attend a couple times. But just to put a name with a face with a lot of the athletic trainers, and that's one thing. I used to be the one that would sit back and, you know, I'd go over when I was on the field, I'd go over and meet the athletic trainer from the other team. If I was the home team, But outside of that, of wanting to reach out and meet someone, now it's like almost a challenge to see someone new walking, you know, in the office, or whether it be in the athletic training setting, so I can introduce myself and meet a new fellow athletic trainer.
One question that I kind of have, and this probably goes back a little bit, but explain a little bit of the dynamic with the gear now for umpires, just because going back years ago, you had the old pad that they held in front and a small face shield, and that face shield then eventually, or their mask eventually got larger. They've begun to have the throat shield. All of that, and I mean, it's actually a large process, correct?
Correct. Part of my job is Major League Baseball. We host umpire camps throughout the nation once a month. And obviously, when I go to these camps, I'm not only there as the on-site medical, but we also do a fitness 101 class where we go over safety equipment from top to bottom. Our time is spent on the umpire headgear, whether it be the mask or the bucket, but there's been so many technology changes, not only in the weight, but the design, the foam pads that are on the inside of those, really reduce that umpire's risk of injury. You know, we had an umpire, we had actually three umpires last year that were wearing the traditional mask. And the big difference between the catcher wearing the traditional mask and the umpire is just wearing his soft cap underneath that mask. There is no skull cap. We've experimented with some different skull caps that the umpire would wear on the plate, but so far we've not found anything that works for the functional of the plate umpire. And what do I mean by that? The umpire now has his mask in one hand, an indicator in the other, a skull cap, and you know, tucked under his arm, and he's supposed to make a safe call. You know, the catcher can just fling off the mask and be out of the way, or leave it on. But obviously, the umpire has to take all that stuff off. So we're looking at a solution that can help the umpire give additional protection, with still remaining in the safety aspect of anybody else on the field. As far as other safety equipment, as you alluded to, the throat guard, still probably about 50-50 on umpires, believe it or not, at the professional setting, that that do not wear a throat guard. Generally, it takes one foul ball, and they're calling our uniform supplier and ordering those. Other thing we stress on is the just protector. During the umpire schools and the rookie camps that we host, they come in and, you know, they get, as they're doing their cage work and demo work, I'm walking around making sure it's fit properly. Obviously, it's a little more comfortable if they wear it a little bit looser, but that exposes the clavicle. So one thing we're really focusing on when we're doing that is to make sure that that chest protector is worn tight enough, that it it is tight enough to cover the clavicle. And then footwear. Again, another issue that's often overlooked. We give the opportunity for each umpire to get measured for custom orthotics every year. It's funded through their personal health insurance, so it's very low cost out of their pocket. But again, another thing that we've done to reduce that risk of injury and soft tissue injury. So it's a lot of preventative stuff. We are definitely working the right direction on.
So when you were talking about the helmet, and obviously concussion is one of your biggest issues. So there is, correct me if I'm wrong, no one does wear any type of helmet. They only wear the mask itself plus their ball cap or their type of cap.
Yeah, for the ones that wear the mask, correct. We do have about 5 or 6% of our umpires that do wear the hockey style catcher's mask, and that does give them the overall protection. That's a personal choice. Yes, for the umpire that wears the traditional mask, there's just a soft shell cap. We're looking at, again, inserts that they can wear below the cap to help that out. But right now there is no other protection. And we actually had two umpires at the major league level and two at the minor league level last year that had to leave the game because of scalp lacerations due to a broken bat coming back and slicing their scalp. Again, would they, you know, with the bucket, would they still have sustained a concussion? No one will ever know, but we can guarantee that that scalp laceration would have been there. And strangely enough, of those two at the minor league level, one of those switched into a bucket shortly thereafter. So, you know, it's a change. I get it. It's not the traditional umpire that umpire mask that they've seen and looking at wearing, but most of the major league umpires that are wearing bucket masks are now at the suggestion of the major league medical coordinator because of previous concussion history injuries.
It's kind of like rodeo where you've got the bull riders that are not wearing a helmet, not wearing a face mask. And we obviously would sit there and think, oh my gosh, I really wish this kid was wearing one. And this would, I don't know why they don't understand that this would prevent so much injury. But then there's that also that understanding of the freedom to be able to move much easier and see and feel like they can get better, and the hockey style mask, not having to pull it off. And it kind of, it is somewhat cumbersome from wearing one in the past to pull off. So,
all right, Mark, recently I watched a video cause someone was talking about an umpire in their cup. Do you guys recommend a specific cup? The one that I watched was about the Nutty Buddy. It's made by a former major league pitcher, major league baseball player. And he actually took like a 90 mile an hour pitching machine fastball off of the cup. So do you guys have a specific recommendation there since we're talking about safety equipment?
Yeah, definitely. Nutty Buddy is one of that, or any other flexible cup. I mean, the old style bike cup that doesn't provide it, because most of the injuries we've seen, testicle injuries we've seen, are not from a dread. It's from the one that bounces up off the plate, comes up and under. So you need something that's obviously going to provide protection from underneath the that area.
If you haven't watched the commercial for the Nutty Buddy, it's definitely it's funny.
the strange enough, the athletic trainer that is in that video, he was with the Brewers at the time, is now and I worked with him when I was with the Royals. Yes, if you watch the video of the inventor of that, you'll see an athletic trainer, a gentleman standing off the side, and he's a good friend of mine. So he's the one that he knew of that video before he became really big.
With I guess with that, with the equipment, staying on the equipment, how is equipment removal possibly brought in? Because you do think about concussions. I've definitely seen positions where umpires have gotten into where they get that backswing or they take the broken bat. And I mean, obviously, if you're wearing a mask and no helmet and no skull cap, that you could get a potential, you know, you might have an athlete that's out, or have a umpire that's out, have an umpire that's not responsive, and
having trouble saying umpire instead of athlete, aren't you?
Yeah, I am athlete. I mean, but they are an athlete. I mean, they are an athlete. So, how is equipment removal possibly different with them?
In almost all cases, the headgear, whether it be the traditional hockey style or obviously the mask, is definitely going to be removed just in the course of them, he or she, falling to the ground. I mean, and the mask, obviously, because it's not that tightly secured, but even in the bucket, it's simply fabric straps that are holding the face mask piece to the back of the skull cap or skull bucket, for any better example. So any kind of strong trauma shears will cut right through that. And then the big difference of shoulder pads or chest protector, while it is a chest protector that does strap, all the padding is in the front. So once the headgear is removed, that can be laid flat on a black backboard with no issues. Chest protector generally stays on until they're at the hospital. If it does need to be removed, all the clips are in the front. So while they're still laying supine, it can easily be removed, and the strap's cut and it's slid right off.
All right, Mark. It's National Athletic Training Month, so one of the things we're doing with each of the episodes that we're doing here is going to thank an athletic trainer that has been instrumental to you. And then after we going to do the regular closing, I'm going to have a little bonus. And I'd like for you to tell me about some of your experience working with one of your wife's teams that you talked about. So this is just kind of a teaser. So after I do the closing, then I'd like to come back and talk about that for just a minute.
All right.
So we're going to start with an athletic trainer that you would like to thank. I'll give you a chance to think by telling you mine. Actually, I'm going to go ahead and thank Sean right here. Sean contacted me about the podcast and said, hey, you know, I've listened to almost every episode. I was thinking about doing one, and then I found yours, and I just decided to listen to it instead. But then he offered to help. Hey, is there anything I can do to help? Let me know. So then I had him come on, and now he's been on the podcast probably more than any other single person, and he's doing a great job. He's actually doing some of the stuff on his own. So Sean, thanks. I really appreciate it. And I enjoy the friendship and just the opportunity to hang out and talk with somebody who's at a similar point in life. So thank you.
I appreciate that, Jeremy. I appreciate it.
All right, Mark, your turn.
I've really got, just coming off the top of my head, I probably got two. First of all, Russ Cook out of New Albany, Indiana, where I went to high school with. He's the one, he was a high school athletic trainer, first certified athletic trainer that I ever knew. And as a sophomore in high school, I got involved with his sports medicine program and really guided me towards not only something to stay involved with athletics at the high school level, but then also encouraged me to make it a career, and one that obviously without his guidance, none of this would have been possible. And then obviously many, many athletic trainers I worked with along the minor league level. Most recently, the one that's kind of helped me transition, as I said, from on the field injuries to the current role of umpire medical, and that's Mark Laton, and he is the coordinator of coordinator for Major League Baseball. So he oversees the 78 major league umpires, and then that I have the major league, the minor league umpires. But he's been very, very helpful in guiding me and kind of making me transition a little bit and help in a different mindset of athletic training. So without those two, I think it would be a very different road for me.
Sean?
Oh, throw me this again. Well, I'm going to go back and thank you, Jeremy, for allowing me to come down here. Everything that you guys do down here is great. And I mean, just being able to talk to the amount of people that we talk to and learn, I mean, stuff like this, talking to somebody about umpire. And I didn't know some of the equipment. I didn't know some of the logistics of it. And getting to do that and what you do with your students and what you do for the profession is great. So.
Well, I appreciate it. And a quick shout out to Greg Evans at School Health. He's the one that he met you, Mark, and said, "Hey, Jeremy, I think this guy would be great on your show." So, Greg, thanks for recommending me get a hold of Mark. And then, so now you've been on the show. Brandon Johnson was mentioning on Twitter, somebody asked what kind of athletic training related podcast. So, Brandon, I want to thank you for thinking about me, for mentioning me, the podcast, and listening and being a part of the Sports Medicine Broadcast. So check out Brandon on Twitter, some of his tweets about the SMB. Appreciate it, buddy. If you want to contact me, you can go to sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, and that's where you'll find everything. In this episode of sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/umpire. Mark, I forgot to ask you for the best way if someone wants to contact you. What do you want to give there?
Email. And that's just M and then Stubblefield, S-T-U-B-B-L-E F-I-E-L-D at M-I-L-B.com.
All right, so you can email Mark if you have some more questions about what he does, maybe some of the ways that they take care of umpires, or possibly about, you know, taking a position that's similar to his, or maybe you have an idea that could help streamline his job. M. Stubblefield at M-I-L-B.com. Mark, it has been a pleasure having you, and honestly, I had no idea that there was an umpire or an athletic trainer that worked with just umpires until Greg told me about that. So it's really cool to have the opportunity to speak with such a unique position in athletic training.
All right. Thank you, Jeremy.
All right. So now for the bonus part. All right. So Mark was telling me his wife is an athletic trainer there in Florida, and the state of Florida was going to either decide to get rid of wrestling or add another sport. Mark, what sport did they choose to add?
They chose the varsity women's flag football.
Varsity women's flag football. Okay.
So, by the HSA, athletic trainers in school have to cover that. So wife or whoever's covering that particular high school, it's been me a couple times. I get to spend an hour and a half basically watching 7-on-7 women's football, flag football.
There for a second, I thought you were going to say like flags or flag dancing. And when you said flag football, that just threw me into shock. That's crazy.
Yeah, think of homecoming powder puff football year round.
I bet that could probably get pretty interesting.
It does. It's like I said, I've only worked a couple games from time to time, filling in PRN work. But yeah, some of the seasons they have, I mean, they have a JV and a varsity level. Schools have added a freshman division, but most of the schools around here just have JV and varsity. But it's a unique sport. We want to talk about that one. So
yeah, see, maybe I'm just very skewed because when we have powder puff flag football, girls flag football, it's these girls who don't normally play and they don't really train for this. They practice, you know, two times a week for 3 weeks, and then they're going out there and they're getting injured or clawing or fighting and that kind of stuff. But I'm with you. I don't think I could handle doing varsity girls flag football.
it's definitely a tolerance and patience.
I would imagine some of these girls are like pretty athletes, like pretty athletic to probably compete.
You do have a lot of the, because it's a spring sport, so you do have a lot of the soccer athletes and cross country that aren't running track. So you do have your fair amount of athletes, but I believe, as Jeremy said, you also do have the ones that think they can just come off the couch and play an entire season. But like anything else, there are schools that are contending every year for state titles. They also have ones that are, you know, 0-10 on the season. So it's definitely a unique individual.
So not only did we learn about athletic trainers who work with umpires, but we also learned about athletic trainers who work with varsity girls flag football. So if that's your thing, if that's the sport that you just want to watch, go move to Florida.
What's the poor referee doing that is covering, or that's the referee for flag football, women's flag football?
Not just referee singular. They have three guys out there.
Yeah. Oh gosh.
Yes. Yes, it's worse. It's worse than a freshman level football game, I'd imagine. I mean, actually saw the one game I worked last year. The umpire had his cell phone on his hip the entire time, was walking the field. I think after your mobility becomes the issue that you can no longer work, they still let you have your shirt and your officiating pants and let you go work flag football, because you can walk fast, you can cover the field.
Do they play a full 100 yards?
No, it's 30 to 30, so it's 60 yard field.
Gotcha. Is it you said 7-on-7 flag football? Gotcha.
Yeah.
It's probably a narrower field too.
No, they can go the full width of it.
The full width.
But yeah, it's definitely interesting. Like I said, you have to make a road trip down here to Florida from anything between now and May, and you can catch it firsthand experience.
All right. Well, that's all I got. Mark, I appreciate you just sharing your story and being available to contact and share with everybody else that listens on the Sports Medicine Broadcast. So
great. Thanks again for having me, guys.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks, Mark.
Take care.